football on off the ball.
You know, when you get to work in a place for like 4 or 5 days a week, 6 days a week, all your life, I know every sort of, you know, like things like the tiles, where there's a little crack in the tile somewhere going up the stairs and the changing room walls and everything. I know it all to the inch of my life.
Join in the obsession.
Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Racing Pod
on Off the Ball
with William Hill, 18+. See gamblingcare.ie.
This is episode 132 of The Racing Pod on Off the Ball with John Duggan, Johnny Ward. Remember, we're here every week with analysis, race previews, interviews, tips, stories, bit of crack as well. Reminder as well, folks, the full Off the Ball Racing Pod is free wherever you get your podcasts. Johnny, you were in Spain.
Yeah, I was in Spain, JD. Nicely refreshed, got a bit of cycling in, watched probably the title decider in the Premier League. Went to an Irish bar called The Harp, hoping to watch Galway and Roscommon. Quickly became apparent that Arsenal was on all the screens and different...
And they weren't budging.
No, they were on different... I don't know what the channel was actually. There were some kind of colourful characters like in studios. You'd be like, oh, who is he working for now? I haven't seen him in years. And it's like... Lanzarote is probably my idea of a holiday from hell for much of my life, but I've just gotten to that stage where I bought two books at the airport. One of them was Patrick Radden Keefe's latest book, London Falling.
I heard about that book.
Oh my God. I've gotten to the stage in life where I am on holiday looking forward to going to bed early so I can read a book. And that was the book. It's absolutely incredible. He's like the best true story novelist I've come across, and I can only marvel at somebody's ability to do a book like that and just like have so many facts and stories and have such punchy prose and all that. So my young lad, you know, he's two now next month, but he seems to have emerged a different person over the course of the week. He's just completely grown into himself. So we had a great little holiday.
I was down the south of France recently and went past a hippodrome where they're racing. Oh. It's like a standard racetrack and racing books.
Was that Cantumere?
Near enough.
I think it might have been Cantumere.
It's near Nice, yeah.
Yeah,
I
think that's Cantumere, yeah. And you were in Antibes.
Antibes, yeah, yes.
Lovely part of the world.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Yeah. And talking about books, racing books. I think racing books are best, you know, the glossy coffee table ones sometimes are the best ones. Can I think of 10 great racing books? Probably not. And the Seabiscuit one was very good.
That was a great book.
The David Walsh, Richard Dunwoody one, remember being excellent. Even Davy Russell's book recently with Don McLean was good. But racing books, the Barney Curley stuff, Raymond Smith did good stuff in the 90s. Just talking to, you know, the punters and stuff. But there probably is a market for a decent racing book.
Yeah, I suppose racing people are often not particularly well educated, and it's difficult. Like a lot of jockeys don't get as far as the leading certs. So
they're in different ways, surely. They're educated in a different way.
Racing people in the case of like first, second and third level education would be very lowly educated in the overall context in Ireland. It's just because they're absolutely immersed in racing.
Yes.
And you get anomalies then like the likes of Patrick Mullins, who's a really good writer. So if Patrick writes a book, he'll be very good. But the jockeys, I suppose the jockey stories, you often get the ones of like, I dabbled in drinking drugs, or I had a, you know, a dodgy past, but I overcame it.
But then again, you had a generation of jockeys that might have left school early that are some of the most articulate, amazing communicators, very intelligent people.
Mm.
So they might not have had the classic education to get to third level. But
is education, I suppose? Life education.
Yeah.
I liked Richard Hughes' book a lot. Lee Morse did that. That was probably my favourite of the books about the jockeys. The Vincent O'Brien book, albeit it's...
Ivor Herbert's one.
Yeah, obviously it's a little bit kind of...
It's coffee table again, isn't it?
Coffee table, but it's good. I think there's an interesting book in Jim Bulger. He's 85 this year. I'm hoping to maybe do an interview with him soon because he's selling up his yard. But Jim's at an interesting place in racing now where, you know, I suppose the allegations that he was making has made it... He's in a different place. And he actually had a very good filly win the other day, first time out. I'd love to see him. I love a trainer at the end of his career, near the end of his career, getting a good horse. But he's probably like... I'm sure if he's good stories to tell.
Because you did a Willie Mullins article for The Currency recently. You haven't read it yet, but what did you learn from your research around that?
it's funny, the fella got on to me about that subsequently. You know, is there a book in Willie Mullins or whatever? So it kind of got me thinking, Willie's 70 this year. I don't know if Willie Mullins would want to do a book. There has to be a book about him or in him. The problem with books like that is, like, I mean, I suppose how much will the person say about his life? Yes. And how much is he even obliged to say, like, you know, good and bad? Like, it's, I mean, if I wrote a book on myself.
There's no requirement.
No, if I brought out a book on myself, I'm sure there's a lot of stuff I probably wouldn't want in. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, if you want to do a book with somebody. And that was the thing with Richard Hughes, because Richard Hughes had things in the book that he wasn't proud of, but he said to Lee Morrison, these are in the book. That's just my, it's almost like a cathartic process. But Willie Mullins, I asked him, you know, to give me a number for somebody he went to school with, because he went to the Cistercians in, is it Roscrea? And I think all of the Mullins family were sent there because Paddy and Maureen wanted them to have a good education, really want them to have a good education. And one of the people he gave me the number of was Dick Spring's brother, who was in his class. And Dick Spring's brother brought out, played for Donald Spring, isn't it? He played for Munster. He was on the team that beat the All Blacks.
78.
In 78. And I got talking to him about his interest in racing. Then he said, myself and I think it was another guy from the team got involved in a horse. And Ken Condon had the horse. And maybe John Ox had initially, but anyway, they ended up with Ken Condon. But they said, what do you want to call it? And he said, well, I don't have long. And they looked at the team, the team photo, and it was Moss and Tucker, but the two people who sadly had passed away from the team. Moss Keane and
Colin Tucker, I think it is, or
Colin Tucker. So they named the horse Moss Tucker, and he ended up being like a Group 1 winning sprinter, which is incredible, like incredible in Ireland. And but he'd interesting, like, not like mad, oh, we had these, you know, we did this mad story about Willie, but the Cistercians seemed to be a great place to be educated, and they loved sport. And he told me that Willie was like a long distance runner, more of a stayer than a sprinter, like his horses. And then I spoke to Tony Mullins about their upbringing, and I think Tony Mullins is one of the easiest people to listen to in racing, and whatever his education was, Cistercians, he's a great way with words. And it was interesting, yeah. And Willie was on the back of obviously the Cheltenham that he's had and the Grand Nationals and that, so the currency wanted a piece on him. But I'd say, you know, I only scratched the surface with Willie. Like, he's a really intriguing character. I've always found him to be good to deal with in a highly pressurised job. I think the thing with Willie as well is, if you're an owner with Willie Mullins, he is the boss. You know, he is the boss, and that's the way it works, and that's fine.
Probably more with celluloid and movies that have been associated with racing. Was there, Pierce Brosnan was in the Gay Future movie, yeah. I think the Murphy Stroke, I think it was called. And the documentary that they did about Barney Curdy with Ross Whittaker was incredible, about Yellow Sam in 1975, 50 years on. That was a beautiful documentary.
People love that stuff, like, because, I mean, the biggest win on a horse race I had, and this isn't trying to turn the story into me, but people can't get this into their head, the concept of winning money in racing. I met a trainer at Punchtown, and we were probably having a few drinks, and I said, have you a winner for me? And he goes, I'll have a winner on Wednesday at Dundalk. And I said, if he wins, I'll put a horse in training with you. And the horse won at 20-1, and I had a good bet in it, but it was a 6-furlong sprint, and I won an absolute life-changing amount in the space of a minute. Now, it obviously could have lost, and likely was going to lose in the law of averages, but I won like a lot of money in the space of just over a minute. People can't get into their heads that look down on gambling, the possibilities of especially if you can get the pick six up or something like that, or do what Barney did. And people love them stories because it's like
it's the underdog, isn't it?
It's the underdog, and it's also
because
just
there's no guarantee that what happened at Dundalk would happen. There's no guarantee what happened at Barney.
There's an element of gambling, like there is, and whether you like it or not, there is risk. And even if Barney's horses had a lot in hand, like I did a feature on the Yellow Sam story years later, and I was talking to Seamus Mulvaney about it. And I'm very nostalgic, even about stuff that happened before I was born. I love stories like from another era. I find the past is a more hopeful place in many ways, even if it isn't. And like I remember Seamus is probably 86 or 7 now. He's going to the races nearly every day. Like, amazing. And he said how he was looking over at Sean Graham, and Sean Graham kept easing out the price of Barney's horse. And so there were, like, Sean Graham was like dictating the ring. So they were just like, this horse isn't fancied. But Sean Graham was the only bookie that Barney had told about it. So they were in on it. And I think, like, Barney was in debt at the time. This is the problem. So he needed an out. And he worked on this and he worked on this and he worked on this. Sean Graham kind of was in cahoots with him. And it was an amazing story. And, like, Seamus could remember it like it was yesterday, even though it's, what, 50 years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah.
51 years ago now.
And the Graham sons are, like, Sean Graham died very, very young. His sons are still going racing, brilliant lads. And they almost don't know anything much about the story themselves, because I think Sean was so discreet.
Well, the thing about, I remember watching the documentary, that Barney just went home and had a cup of tea.
Mm.
I think he was teetotal. But it was, he wasn't jumping around the room having cigars and whiskey. He was just matter of fact about it. Yeah. Had a good day and that was it.
JB McManus is teetotal. You know, Paul Byrne is teetotal. I definitely think the likes of Paul Byrne, he gets his kicks from plotting a horse to win or plotting a horse to be bought.
Yeah, there was an article in the Racing Post about it recently, and you know, about some of them that have obviously come off, and then other ones that are some of the horses described as useless. So you, sometimes you just don't know. And talking about films, there was a movie done in the late 90s called Double Carpet, with all
33
the
3-1.
Yeah, all the kind of Irish film characters that you'd know, like Joey the Lips Fagan is in it. Mm. Johnny Murphy was his name, the actor, about a guy with a gambling problem who helps with his friends move a guy's car at the races, and your man gives him this horse next week. Brizzling is the horse. Mm. Yeah, whatever. And he goes, not this horse will win. And he's 33-1. And the whole movie's called Double Carpet.
Mm.
But it's about your man with his gambling addiction, and his girlfriend is leaving him, and what's going to happen with this race. And it was done as a short film, Irish film. And it was, I remember watching on RT in the late 90s, and I'd love to be able to get it.
Yeah.
Because I've been looking up, Jasmine Russell was in it as well. I've been looking, it's almost like a Jerry Stenbridge type film. I don't know how I'd be able to find it, but I'd love to watch it because it was really, really well done.
I think there might be a guy who might be able to help you there. I was thinking as well, the same trainer who gave me that horse at Punchtown, maybe a few months later, he gave me a horse as 25-33-1 in Gorn, and I had it for six figures. One just single bet, bit each way, but six figures. It's a big price. And led all the way. I'd stop watching it. I was that confident. And it was kind of done on the line, more or less.
Yeah.
And that was fine. So I think I'd covered myself with the place, but like, this was going to be my biggest win ever. And I was kind of almost thinking during the race, what am I going to do with this money? Where will I go on holiday? Who will I give money to? All of these lovely things that you can do. And then last year, I had a horse in training with a fella. And he had a horse running one day, and he said, back my horse in the bumper. So I backed the horse in the bumper and led a long, long, long way out. And it was done in the last 20, pretty much done on the line by a Patrick Mullins ridden horse. So I was looking up this horse anyway. That's after the fact, I was kind of looking up the horse I'd backed and its pedigree. The dam of the horse, the mother of the horse, was the horse that I backed in Gorn that was done on the line. And she was a very, very low-grade miler. Very low-grade miler. Should never be, like, breeding bumper horses. That is absolutely, in one, like, story, why I love racing. There were two hard-luck stories, but it was that I could go back to, I backed that mother. I backed your mother one day, and the same thing happened. And I'll always remember that mother, because that was my big, like... Now, I probably would have just brought a horse and squandered the money, but people who are down, and there's so many people down on backing horses and this and that, they don't get the possibilities of, like, of getting a treble up or getting a four-timer up, and you've had luck yourself. They don't get the possibilities. I was on holiday last week, and when you go on holiday and it's paid for by a winning bet, that is a lovely, lovely feeling.
Well, obviously, all we're saying is, because some people do have problems, we're just to gamble responsibly, and if it's not for you, accept that it's not for you, and accept that you can be a failure in this area of your life, and you can be a success in many other areas. And some people sometimes just can't put they can't gamble like gentlemen, as it were.
No,
and so therefore some people do develop problems. So there has to be a degree of responsibility when we talk about it.
Yeah, 100%. And also, like,
but the zero tolerance thing now is the other end of the scale.
No, it's like, it's when you think of a horse race, like, if you're trying to tell somebody who's never had a bet before, I'm having a bet on a handicap here, and trying to explain, I have to somehow figure out that there are 20 runners in this race with totally different weights, totally different jockeys. They might be different sexes, the horse. Some can be mares, some can be geldings, some can be colts. They are running on ground that's completely different to what they've run on before. They're going from different stalls. How is the wind? How is the trainer form? A million things to take into account. And I have to come up with an opinion on that. And if I back a horse at 8-1 and he goes off 2-1 and wins, that's an incredible buzz. Like, because you just, all of these things you have to take into account and you got it right. Like, and it's a mystery. And like, Geoffrey Bernard, who wrote for The Sporting Life. And
he was unwell.
Like, he was Geoffrey Bernard is unwell. If you're unfamiliar with Geoffrey Bernard is unwell, Geoffrey Bernard is unwell was written at the bottom of his column when he was basically too unwell to write it. So somebody else wrote the article and was made into a play starring Peter O'Toole. And you are sort of romanticising rampant alcoholism. Like, he was an awful, awful alcoholic, but he was a brilliant writer. Like, so many good writers, Jack Kerouac and whoever else, they were great writers, but they had problems. And he would write about going to the races and trying to pick up information and trying to nick a few quid here and there. It was incredible journalism, and you didn't need to ever have a bet or have a drink to enjoy that. And that sort of, there's always a story in racing. There's always, like, trying to get the next win or trying to get that bit of information, you know. And we shouldn't be ashamed of that.
Yeah, where there's no certainties also, because the horse can't talk and the horse can't tell if he's sick or not, or he's had a cough, or he's had a cold, or if he's bled.
Yeah, they're animals.
Remember Nick Dundee, never forget it, 1999, Southern Alliance Novices Chase at Cheltenham. Thought this was the Gold Cup winner of the next few years. Thought he was an amazing, he was actually owned by the Magniers, and it was unusual for a jumps horse. I know Theatre World was, but I saw this horse win at like Leopardstown. He was hammering about 15 lengths, 20 lengths. And he was himself, and looks like trouble bird, distance clear.
Mm.
And top of the hill, he fell. And he was never the same horse.
Yeah.
And looks like trouble went on to win the Gold Cup the following year.
And of all that, like, I met Kieran Fitzgerald, the Galway footballer, on holidays. And I met Billy Dennehy, who was a very good soccer player involved with Kerry FC. We're talking a bit about football. But other sports don't give you that well of stories that racing does. Like, you just don't forget the hard luck stories or the big wins. And you'll remember very, like, very, very strange but minute aspects of that day. And I watched the race there and I met such and such here and he told me to put that horse in on top of it. All of these things. And you'll remember, like, you'll almost remember exactly how the race panned out because of the buzz. Like, it's that buzz. Like, and I feel racing is like no other sport in that regard. I really do.
And for everybody, we all have that to solve the puzzle. And the night before Album Photo won the Gold Cup, it clicked in my head, Album Photo. And he's 12-14-1 because Willie Mullen said this thing about horses improving from a 6-7 or 7-8, that the improved Hedgehunter was one of them. And then it dawned on me, it was the same with Papillon when he won the Grand National. It's Papillon yeah. Because Papillon is a 2-mile chaser, never made a mistake over fences. If he gets the trip, and then he was actually plunged anyway. So sometimes, yeah, now I've worked it out. A Gaelic Warrior, 5 minutes before the Gold Cup, I knew he'd win the Gold Cup. And obviously, in hindsight, you can say that he did. But sometimes it clicks.
Yeah.
And sometimes you can't work it out. You can't see it. So the Lockinge now, say, at Newbury now, tomorrow, is there something jumping off the page at me? I've gone through every single horse in the race. No. So therefore, if I'm going to have a punt in it, shouldn't be irresponsible about it.
Oh no, absolutely. Like,
and then there's also the danger sometimes as well of following horses off a cliff because you've got blind loyalty to them.
I didn't have a good punchdown.
Like Hearty Ball, for example.
Yeah. I didn't have a good punchdown, but you can't, like, you know, that saying, don't push the river, like the river, let the river flow itself. Like, do not, if you're, and that's the aspect to the whole thing that I find difficult is that if you're on a bad run, or if you've had a few, like a bad punchdown, not terrible, but I just didn't have a great punchdown. But it's like then you don't need to have a bet like the next day, the next week, and I basically haven't. Like but it does kind of dwell on you. I didn't have a good punchdown. But getting back to it again, like we're going to look at a race tomorrow in Navan, and there's a horse running for Aidan O'Brien who's been put in favour. He's by Frankel. And even by me just saying he's by Frankel, that evokes memories of Frankel, who's the greatest race horse I've ever seen, and his guineas win. But the horse's half brother, is a horse called Agenda, right? And we're speaking about Antibes. I was in Antibes on the balcony, at least two or three glasses of red into my day, and my missus had a baby due in 2 or 3 months, and I was messaging Aidan O'Brien about something. It wouldn't have been specifically that, I think, but we're on about something. And I just asked him, geez, I fancied Agenda that day at Dundalk. Really fancied him. I was like, more or less, is there any way you could get me a few quid for to pay for the bit of the baby? You know? And like, you know, and this horse was like 6-4, 7-4. And he basically said, like, this is 3 years ago now, I think. He said he should win. Something like that. And I got a bit brave and I had a good bet in the horse. And I watched it on the balcony in Antibes having a glass of wine. And he bolted up. But if he's only ever win.
But if he'd lost, you couldn't be blaming Aidan.
I absolutely never, ever, ever will blame anyone for losses except myself. And you have to take responsibility. If you back a loser, that's your on you, and you move on. It is what it is. Never shoot the messenger. And Aidan O'Brien head for a few bits of clothes.
Yeah.
With the Agenda, whose half brother runs at Navan tomorrow.
We'll get into Navan in a moment. Let's look at the Lochan Stakes at Newbury then, 2:35, 1 mile, 10 runners on Saturday. The going at Newbury is good to Firmin Places. The money has come for John Keel because it's Jud Monton. They're having such a great week after York and won at Ascot last month, course winner in the Greenham Stakes, narrow second in the French Guineas. We have, when I'm looking at the odds here with Hills, Demisus is 3-1, Zeus Olympios 7-2, The Lion in Winter is 13-2, Notable Speech 6-1 chance. More Thunder attracting money into 10, Salan attracting money 11-1, John Quill, as I said, 12-1 shot, Sichero's Gift 33, Dancing Gemini 40, Mississippi River might be the pacemaker 100-1.
Very open race, very, very open race. Like, if you start with Notable Speech, I think I may have tipped him in this last year when he was fourth. And he comes here on the back 36 days ago of finishing fourth, which is kind of a similar prep at Keeneland. And you mentioned that Mississippi River is likely the pace setter. I'd probably give the Lion Winter one more chance, Shady. I'm not quite sure how good he is, but, you know, as in to have a horse by See the Stars, who's a very good miler, this could be a good stallion prospect for Coolmore, but they've kept him in train as a four-year-old, still a colt. He beat Expanded last time at Leopardstown. Tachonomics, who was fourth, more or less backed up that form at the weekend. But Aidan O'Brien said, we're going to have a long year with this guy afterwards, and he was just ready to start. I would say he's a lot more to do. He's a lot more to offer. And by and large, he's a consistent horse. He's had a couple of, like, sort of in and out runs, but he'll get an absolutely good pace to sit off. He will be vulnerable, but I feel he's a very solid chance. Sean Tasey Gosden have a very good record in the race. Likely to have the favourite of Mace, who beat King's Gambit the last day in a Group 3 at Newmarket. Travels well in his races. It's very, very open, this. I wouldn't be surprised if Notable Speech went very close. Very, very good 3-year-old and has plenty of ability still. And the one that's intriguing in the race really is Zeus Olympios 7, what, his fifth start, and should come on from that run the last year because he's been off in September. It's a race I've a fondness for since, I think, Hawkwing won it about 20 years ago. I remember watching it and he was brilliant on the day. And you look at some of the winners, Baid and Palace Pier, in recent years.
Well, it's a fair track, Newbury. I've always liked Newbury's a track. I think Notable Speech is the best horse in the race. He's the top rated horse. He was a very talented former Guineas winner. He took the Breeders' Cup mile last year, but can he hit the ground running first time out? That's my concern.
He ran at Keeneland in April, so he's basically, obviously it's his last run.
Market is negative. I mean, I think he's the best horse in the race, but as a betting proposition, no. I mean, twice the price, John Quayle has won at Ascot recently, and the fact that there's a bit of money for it might make him an each-way chance for me. I do like Damasius, the way where you want to pronounce it, and Zeus Olympios, I respect him. I mean, Cicero's Gift was a 100-1 winner of the Queen Elizabeth Stakes at Ascot last October. Sometimes, though, when the fluke happens, it's hard for it to be repeated because things sometimes just go a horse's way. But it is a course and distance winner. Salan, they've made the trip from France but hasn't been seen this year. More Thunder was a handicapper who's obviously gone up in grade. He's not discounted. He's won over the course. But it's a good race to watch. It's a good each-way race, I would say.
Yeah, and Salan's a very interesting horse because in the Prix du Moulin, Last year, he beat Rosalian, whose form would tie in a lot with notable speech. The line in Winter was third that day. Henri Matisse was fifth. And he's by the man of the sire of the moment, I suppose, Wooten Bassett. Last seen fifth to notable speech in Delmar behind line in Winter, but definite chance was put in as big as 20 to 1.
The other race we'll have a look at Newbury on Saturday is the Aston Park Stakes, which is the 1.5 mile race with five starters. Kalpana, shades against 11 to 10 with Hills. Arabian Force, 9 to 2. West Wind Blows, 4s. French Masters, 6s. Liberty Lane, bit of money for that now into 9 to 1. West Wind Blows, interesting. We could ask Kalpana the most questions following a second at the Shima Classic at Maidan in March, a very expensive race. But Kalpana, if she's fit on her first run of the season, the ground and trip, no issue. She probably is the best horse in the race again.
Yeah, I'd have to take her on. Like a filly taking, giving way to four horses, all of whom have a fitness edge. On her first run last season, I think she ran in the Curra.
Behind Los Angeles. Yeah.
Like it was a perfectly solid run, but like it that sort of run, she's possibly a little bit better. That was the Tassos Gold Cup. She's possibly a little bit better over a mile and a half. Now, she was ahead of White Birch that day, but I thought White Birch was a bit disappointing last year, and I don't think that form necessarily be good enough to win this. You mentioned West Wind Blows. I think he's the obvious pace in the race, in a race that five horses in the race. William Buick, I think, will definitely try to make this tactical go from the front, but Arabian Force, for me, for Willie Haggis, will just sit off him and hopefully pounce. But I would be all over taking on Kalpana. I don't think she's a superstar at the prices.
What are you
going
to
I'm going with Arabian Force. One thing about punting horse, I think, is like literally 9-2 with all the bookmakers this horse. I think one thing about if you're having a bet in a race, you have to have some idea in your head of how the race is going to pan out, at the very least for your horse. And in my view, this is fairly, with a fair degree of confidence, Arabian Force won't be tactically inconvenienced by whatever happens. And Kalpana, she might just come on for the run a bit and she might be a bit fresh. Can't have her at the prices.
We're going to have a look at Navan then on Saturday, the 407, the 8 stakes, 1 mile, 5 furlongs. You have, what, 6 runners in this? Azakir, Limestone, New Zealand, Trojan Fighter, Sangreal and Star of Tara. I actually liked Azakir, third run. Made all to win over 10 furlongs at Leopardstown last month in the colours of Aga Khan by Johnny Mercer.
I don't know what it is about this race. I just love the makeup of this race. And I really like Navan as a track. And for whatever reason, I love it as a flat track. I think it's, you have so much room in the straight to not have a hard luck story. And it's, what's it, at least 3 furlongs in the straight with a very stiff finish. So you have to get the trip here. If New Zealand goes off favourite here, I would be surprised, at the very least surprised. And New Zealand is the half brother to Agenda, who I was talking about. Out of different league, JD, who was a really smart horse. But if you look at his general profile, he'd won one over a mile and two, which is his reappearance when he didn't get home. His runs as a 2-year-old, say over 7 furlongs, he beat Isaac Newton when he just held on in a maiden. And his other runs were fine, but he now has blinkers on and he steps up. He's only proven over a mile. He now steps up to 1.5 miles at Navan, which is almost like 1.7 miles somewhere else. He has so much to prove, albeit in a race that honours Yates, and a race that Aidan has won quite a few times this year. But I had to look up Trojan Fighter when I looked up his profile, because when I saw he won at Ballinrobe over 1.5 miles, I thought that has to be the race Carmer's won. And Carmers went on to win this for Paddy Toomey,
yeah,
whose strike rate's unbelievable at the moment. But it's notable. Billy Lee's a very good judge, and Billy Lee was sort of saying afterwards, oh, you know, where is he going to go and all that. He said he'd have to step up to be where Carmers was at. So I'm interested in him potentially as a saver, but I'm very much with you on Asakir here. He is he looks like a horse that will really thrive at least at middle distances. I'd have a slight concern about the 1.5 miles at this stage of his career, but if you watch his run at Leopardstown in April, he beat Cannes beside the beautiful Antibes, and Cannes won a maiden readily since at Leopardstown, in which Antigua ran well, who was 4th this time. And Asakir was ridden aggressively that day by Ben Cohen over the 1.2 miles on yielding to soft, and just kept going. He's very much a middle distance pedigree. I'd be all over him at 5-2. The other horse in the, sorry, Limestone is of note, particularly of note. I really like his attitude at Cork.
Let's bring in Sam Norris from William Hill, who's on the line. How are you, Sam?
Very good chaps. Yeah, yourselves?
Yeah, not too bad. Thanks, Sam. The lock-in stakes then at Newbury is the big race of the weekend. Well, definitely of Saturday anyway. And how are you assessing this and what is the market telling you?
Yeah, I think it could be a really good looking renewal of this race. And fortunately, from our point of view, we've seen quite a good spread of the money, which always means that, you know, we can try and be hopefully a bit more competitive on the front end of the market. So hopefully it's a competitive set of prices that are out. The horse we're kind of keen to take on, this won't come as a huge surprise given the yard form, it is Notable Speech. Obviously, they're really struggling, that the Charlie Appleby runners.
What is going on there, Sam?
I don't know. I spoke to Ken Pitson yesterday, who obviously does a lot of paddock watching. I asked him if there's anything that he can see with the horses. Do they look physically different? He said they look absolutely fine, still turned out really well. And I think it's the manner of the defeat as well, isn't it, Johnny? The two in the Dancy midweek got hammered. Yeah, the two favourites in the William Hill Derby and Oaks Trials at Lingfield, Maho Bay and Romantic Symphony, got hammered. It's not like they're running well and they're just disappointing. They're running really bad. At a time of year, which is traditionally very kind to Charlie Appleby, usually does really well in May, usually does very well at that Guineas meeting at Newmarket. I don't think he had a winner there this year. The last few years, it's been a quiet June, struggled at Royal Ascot. But for the yard to be out of form at this time of year, where they're typically so strong, is a real concern. So
4 weeks. 4 weeks, like at this stage of the season, Charlie Appleby is 4 weeks without a winner.
It's mad, isn't it?
Isn't that absolutely... Sorry, 21 days, 3 weeks, 28 runs. So 3 weeks without a winner. Incredible, Sam.
It really is. You know, for a yard with that kind of ammunition, with those horses who are going off at those prices as well, you've got to be against their runners at the moment. I mean, Notable Speech is 4-1 out to 11-2, so punters are kind of... echoing those views as well. If the yard were to spring back to form at any stage, and obviously, you know, most people don't want to pay to find out, it'll turn around eventually, but who knows when. I mean, he does have some of the best form in the race at the top level. Obviously, former Guineas winner, won at the Breeders' Cup last year, but the yard form is really concerning. I think Zeus Olympios is potentially interesting here at 7-2. Carl Burke, their string haven't been firing at the level we've become accustomed to over the course of the last few years. But he was saying the other day that apparently some of them have just been a little bit behind where they usually are. And those who've had a run, have had a comeback run, have stripped fitter for it. Zeus Olympios had that at Sandown. He looked some machine last season. So if that comeback run does bring him on, he's very interesting in the race. Demisus, who ran eye-catchingly in the Dante last year before flopping in the Derby, he's won every race he's had since. The Lion in Winter, he won on his comeback run when a lot of Aidens were kind of disappointing and needing the run. Even Saarland, like the French horse, he's got to turn the form around a bit with a couple of these from the Breeders' Cup, but he got a bit upset in the starting stalls. Don't think he liked Del Mar. He was a winner at Paris-Longchamp last season. I think Newbury will suit him more. Cicero's Gift's obviously a Group 1 winner. He won at a massive price last season at Ascot. It's a really deep race, I think. But the main kind of market headline is the negativity for Notable Speech, really, more than horses being backed against him.
What about elsewhere at Newbury or other racetracks in the UK at the weekend or even Navan tomorrow or Nace on Sunday? Is there anything that you're spotting or you want to talk to us about, Sam?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. Johnny mentioned Cal Parner in the 125. Like she's been very strong in the betting since we opened the book into 11-10. Obviously won that filly and mare's mile on Champions Day at Ascot the last 2 years. But I kind of get the idea that she'll clearly be working back from that. She's the best horse in that race, but it's how geared up she's going to be on the comeback run. And we have just seen a little nibble in that race for West Wind Blows, who's 7-2 from 4-1 now, 11-4 from 4-1, I should say, West Wind Blows. Now, the run in the Shima Classic behind Calandigan at Maidan, that's pretty choice form, that. Wasn't beaten very far. He's obviously fitter than Cal Parner off the back of that. So, I'm interested to see if they continue to come for West Wind Blows, even though Cal Parner kind of is the form sort of choice in the race. Johnny's got there before me when it comes to Trojan Fighter. I know he didn't put him up, but it's got to be interesting that he's treading the Karma's route from that Ballin Road race coming into this, which was the same path they went last season. Be interested to see kind of how he goes. And the two sprint races on Sunday at Nace as well, we're betting on both of these. the 426 contest, the race that Lady Amman won last year before having that ambitious tilt at the Nunthorpe. He got five unbeaten fillies and a newcomer in there.
Cracking race, isn't it, Sam?
Really, really, really good renewal, yeah. I kind of thought all the V's are interesting. Velozzi's already a listed winner, and he's probably the most proven. Victorious has got the course and distance form. We just about make that one favourite. A little bit of the Ballydoyle factor in there. And Follering is an interesting raid attempt for Archie Watson. Only won a small race at Redcar, but interesting they go here. So, yeah, that looks a really good renewal. It produced some good horses last year.
You have this price, yeah?
Yeah. We're 5-4 Victorious.
5-4. And what price for Velozzi?
Velozzi's 5-2.
Okay.
They're further apart than I thought they'd be.
Yeah, Victorious, if she's really well bred. And when she won here on debut, very, very strong at the finish, JD. I really like that. But I was at Cork when Velozzi won first time. I thought she got a lovely, kind ride by Billy Lee first time out. And she was very good at the Curragh. Just be a little bit suspicious maybe of the stiff six at this stage, but really, really good race.
It is. You know, I'd be going for Victorious.
Yeah, I like Victorious.
More to come. That's the 426 at Nice on Sunday, the Irish EBF Philly Sprint Stakes over 6 furlongs for 2-year-olds. Then the Lacken Stakes half an hour later, 4:56 Sunday at Nice, 6 furlongs for 3-year-olds, 8 runners. Charles Darwin, surely.
Odds on or against?
Charles Darwin price, Sam.
8-11, Charles Darwin.
Take 11-8. Take 11-8, Charles Darwin, lads. I'm in the wrong game here, son. If I were working in your office, I'd be like, take on Kalpana, take on Kalpana, take on Kalpana. Kalpana wins.
Profit that's, warning, Johnny Ward.
That's the end of that. 8-11 on Charles Darwin then.
Yeah.
That's like me every week, by the way. I go to the traders and I'm like, oh, there's a horse today running at York, Synchronicity. I think she'll go really well. And the trader's like, well, we're dead keen to take her on. We've got to take her.
Royal Bay Sen was the other one that stood out for me in that race. Impressive winner on debut for Johnny Murta Cork over 5.5 furlongs.
Interesting to hear Ben Cohen afterwards. He said, you know, she wouldn't be shown that at home, and she really did go on the ground. And I feel this will be a different test. A little bit of rain around, but it should be goodish ground. Charles Darwin seems to have trained on, like he seemed to be good at Navan the last day, but yeah, Havana, I mean, Anna is a very good horse as well.
Yeah, Ascot Trudy, the plan for Charles Darwin, and this is another step. And there's also a race on Saturday at Navan, the Royal County Handicap, 1 mile, 2 furlongs. I thought this is a very apt horse for you, Johnny. Mad, Bad and Dangerous.
Yeah, not my selection in the race. No? Mad, Bad and...
Johnny Soda!
What was that line from You Ugly Hateful Man? Mo heard from Flanders and the Simpsons, and he said, well, I may be ugly and hateful, but I... what was the third thing you said? Mad, Bad and Dangerous. I wouldn't say I'm dangerous. I'd say I'm dangerous.
Johnny Soda.
It's not Johnny Soda. It is Manton Bay. Very nice run at Nace last time.
Will he stay?
He should definitely stay. He did flatten out a bit at the line, but he had to dash up the rail to kind of get up there. He already had won over a mile. He's by Ulysses, like Paddy Toomey's horse in Navan, and I'd like this horse, Dave Mernan's horse, in good form. And I'm going against Mad, Bad and Dangerous.
I'm picking Mad, Bad and Dangerous. There you go for Nomad. What about the Derby market and the Oaks market now, Sam? I'm looking at the Dante this week item. I thought was a bit green, but I was quite impressed by the way he won out of Frankel, who has had a Derby winner before. You got Benvenuti Stellini, the current favourite for Aidan O'Brien, who won the Chester Vase. Constitution River showed a nice turn of foot to win the D Stakes. You got Pierre Bonnard in there, possibly a bit disappointing so far. James J. Braddock, Water to Wine. How are you assessing the Derby, Sam?
Yeah, well, we were seriously impressed with Item's victory. With 33-1 Item beforehand, chopped that all the way into 6-1. Still behind Benvenuto Cellini and Constitution River. Obviously, Aidan has got to shuffle his pack and decide what's going where, etc. But these markets are a lot more solid than the Guineas markets, where the 2,000 Guineas betting was just a bit of a mess in the lead up to it, really. But we still rate Benvenuto Cellini the pick of what we've seen so far. But we were very impressed with the run of Item. It wasn't the flashiest win of a trial ever, and it's not maybe the strongest trial that we have all season. But Maltese Cross showed some very, very good battling abilities to fend off Bay of Brilliance at Lingfield last Saturday. The pair were well clear, and I do just feel as though the William Haggis runners this season have been further forward than they ordinarily are. He had a very rare runner for him in the Guineas. They're often a yard who kind of peak back end of the summer, autumn. I mean, they do well through the course of the season. He's a very good trainer, but I just think they're notably further forward this year, the Haggis runners. He had a four-timer across the cards on Tuesday. I think Maltese Cross, even though he doesn't come from a sexy trial, I think he might be interesting at 10-1. And the trainer and owner have said, that's where we're going to go. If everything's all right with the horse, we're going to the Derby. You haven't got that guarantee with all of Aidens, obviously, because they've still got to sort out the hierarchy at Ballydore.
Well, the odd thing is, and I made this point during the week, like if it weren't for Aidan O'Brien and Coolmore, like, where would the Derby be? Because they still love the Derby. And now you get trainers, including William Haggis in the not-too-distant past, saying, he's not ready for Epsom yet. It's not going through
vintage age.
But it's not. It's like, if your normal Derby winner now would not be a stallion of any note. Like, you know, he'll just be, he barely might even go to stud. But I think... You know, the lads, so to speak, who are average age of about 78 or 9 now, right? But they still love the Derby. They still love the idea of winning the Derby.
As they should.
And I know it's an idiosyncratic track, yeah, a mile and a half, this and that. But like, I feel I'd be very surprised if Benvenuto Cellini and Constitution River, I do feel Constitution River will go off the race. But Item was very good, and Frankel beat to the fore. Item beat a horse by Frankel in action in the trial in the Dante, and Benvenuto Cellini's by Frankel as well. But I don't know. I still want Parse to be run in the Derby if they can.
Quickly on the Oaks, Sam, Legacy Link won the Mazador this week.
Yeah, kind of a similar look to the Derby market, in the sense that the York winner we were pretty impressed with goes into 5-1, but still away behind Amelia Earhart, who we rate most highly at 9-4. Legacy Link second in at 5-1. You had Diamond Necklace there at 8-1. Obviously came out and won in France. Venetian Lace ran a storm in the Guineas. That's 10-1, 14-1, bigger for the rest of them in the Oaks. It was a good run from Legacy Link, but again, I think she's behind Amelia Earhart, and she seems bit more likely than some of them to, I'm going to say she's definitely going to line up. I know plans can change, but it does feel like this is going to be the destination for her. Hopefully it is. Hopefully we get a good meal.
John, you got a 50-euro charity bet this week. You got 50 on the nose or 25 each way. What are you selecting on the racing pod?
Yeah, I'm on the nose. If you did want to have a bet in this race with Hills right now, I would have my stake on Asakir and a saver on Trojan Fighter. So say if you put 20 quid on Asakir, that's your normal bet. You'd put 5 euro on Trojan Fighter to cover yourself. So you get your money back at worst if one of them wins. Asakir, though, at 5-2, I really like the makeup of this race. And another thing about horse racing, which people don't get, how the market forms beforehand and how the market decides what should be the favourite here. That's another intriguing aspect to it before the race even happens. And I would be very, very surprised, Sam Norris. I'd be very surprised. I put it to you, Sam Norris, New Zealand will not go off favourite here.
It's an interesting shout. It's always the case that, you know, the market forms, like you rightly say, the day of. What the market's doing today probably bears little significance, maybe resemblance to what it'll do tomorrow. But I think all four of them have got a chance of going off favourite personally.
I agree, yeah. Love Limestone's attitude to Cork.
Okay, yeah. Johnny Ward's charity bet this week in the racing pod, 4:07 at Navan on Saturday, 1.5 miles, the Irish Stallion Farms EBF Yates Stakes, a listed race. The selection is Asakir, trained by Johnny Mercer, to be ridden by Ben Cohen, 5-2, 2.5-1, 50 euro on the nose is Johnny Ward's charity bet this week. Sam Norris and William Hill, thanks so much.
Cheers, guys.
Johnny, thank you. Enjoyed it.
Thanks, JD. Yeah, some nice memories there today.
And we'll chat to you soon, folks, on the Racing Pod. We remember, which is free wherever you get your podcasts. We'll speak soon. Bye-bye.
The Racing Pod.
On Off The Ball.
With William Hill. 18+. See gamblingcare.ie.